Okay, part three of the chapter 9, section 1 questions. Many efforts to do something about worker conditions, the conditions in the factories, the ventilation, the unsafe conditions, etc., etc. Try to get better pay, better lighting in the buildings, all kinds of things were done. The question specifically talks about reducing working hours because there's reference to some court cases in your textbook about doing just that. Well, obviously the workers benefited. You know, instead of working 12 and 14-hour days, you know, hours were reduced to 10 for some people, and then eventually, you know, the 8-hour workday became commonplace later. Their families certainly would have benefited as a result of mom and dad being around more, better stability in the families, all kinds of benefits, which would have also been tremendous societal benefits. But I think the thing that people probably don't consider here is maybe the businesses benefited, the companies benefited. Instead of having workers 12, 14 hours being far less productive at the end of their shift, much more likely to be in an accident or have something go wrong late in a day after working all day. Now with workers working less and newer workers coming in, yes, there's some training involved and all those kinds of things, but one would think that over time, the companies themselves would benefit from having fresher, more productive workers. Election reforms are a critical piece of the progressive era. Let's talk about the main ones. First of all, the secret ballot. I don't know if it's even mentioned in your book, but back in those days before these progressive era changes came about, people voted publicly. They'd go up to a table and announce who they would vote for. Sometimes they'd show of hands in a bar, seriously, that'd be where they voted. Well, if someone's trying to manipulate your vote, or someone is telling you to vote a particular way, whether it's the political machine or whether it's the union or whatever it is, and you don't vote that particular way, there are going to be consequences. Hence the significance of the secret ballot and going into a little box with a little curtain around it and casting your ballot and no one knowing who you voted for. It's kind of significant. Your book also talks about the initiative and the referendum and the recall. All of those things are designed to make our democracy more direct, give people a more direct say in what happens. Initiative, voters can get something put on a ballot. Referendum, they can vote on something put on a ballot. And recall, if there's somebody who's in an elected office who they don't like, they don't think is doing the job, if enough people would vote to recall that person, remove that person from office, it can be done. All of those give individual citizens more say. Now, those ideas can also be rather scary. If you look at the history of those things, they've led to some passage of some peculiar laws sometimes that haven't worked out the way they were initially intended. And if you follow politics at all, most of the more controversial topics, whether that be the legalization of marijuana or same-sex marriage or assisted suicide, any of those kinds of things that are very controversial are typically put on ballots through the initiative and the referendum and voted on by the people because the politicians themselves won't go near them. That's how that's evolved kind of into the modern day. The last one is the 17th Amendment. So I'm answering 6 and 7 together here, an election reform previous to the 17th Amendment. Okay, see if we can understand this. The citizens of the states elected the members who represented their state in the United States House of Representatives. The United States senators, the people who were the two senators representing each of the states, were chosen by the state legislatures. So, for example, in our case, in Topeka, the state legislature would elect the two senators from Kansas who represented the state in Washington, D.C. The people would choose the two or the however many, depending on how much your population is, how big your population is, how many people would represent each state in the House of Representatives. Well, that made senators in the state not responsible necessarily to the people. They weren't subject to the electorate. The people in the state couldn't vote those people out of office if they weren't doing their job for the state, because it was the state legislatures that chose them and elected them. So, huge change in the early 1910s to make the senators from each state subject to the electorate, and now a direct election of senators is undertaken as a result of the 17th Amendment. There are all kinds of other reforms politically, and your book talks about some of the local and you know, the city commission approach that was adopted by many cities, and all kinds of other things that were undertaken as a means by which to eliminate some of the corruption. Oh, another one that I just thought of, the implementation of the direct primary, where the voters of a particular political party would choose who will ultimately be on the ballot to represent that party. Before, that was done entirely by the inner workings of the political parties, and the political machinery in each party determined who the voters would have the opportunity to vote for, which led to, again, a lot of corruption in the political process. So now through the direct primary, not that corruption is removed from the political process, but in an attempt to limit some of that corruption, mitigate some of that corruption, now voters from each party choose who represents them on the ballot before the general election is undertaken. So voters have more of a say now in who the politicians that are ultimately placed on the ballot are through the direct primary process. And you see that going on right now. If you're paying any attention to the presidential election, the debates and all the things you see on the news are the two parties trying to determine through their own processes. Eventually we'll get to the primaries and the caucuses and all kinds of other terms for this in politics and civics, how the two parties go about choosing the candidates that will represent them on the in the presidential election of 2016.